Greetings, listeners. Welcome to another episode of The Regimen. This is Joe.
And Jeff.
What you're about to listen to is a very special episode of The Regimen. We traveled to South Los Angeles to St. John's Well Child and Family Clinic.
Yes.
And interviewed the CEO and president, Jim Monja.
So this is our first big interview. First interview with someone who is not a friend.
Friend or my father.
Family member.
So...
And this will be in two parts, so two episodes. The first episode, which you're about to hear, deals with Jim's work at the clinic and how the clinic operates. The second episode will be on the healthcare system at large and the reform bill that was just passed. So, here we go. I'm working on a dream. Someday. Okay, this is Jeff.
Jeff.
We are here with Jim Monja. Jim, thank you so much for being with us and for giving us an interview.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I guess we'll just jump right in here. Just to start off, could you describe, I guess, just kind of a brief overview of what St. John's does and your job description and the history of St. John's?
St. John's is a network of federally qualified health centers and school-based clinics, and we provide medical, dental, and mental health services to about 120,000 patient visits in South Los Angeles a year, free of charge. And we provide all of the medical case management, pharmaceuticals, testing, lab testing that patients need. I'm the president and CEO, so I'm the leader of the organization, and I've been here since 1993. When I was hired, there was three employees and a small site in the back building of St. John's Episcopal Church, which is where we got our name. We were founded in 1964, right before the Watts riots, to deal with the crisis in healthcare in South Los Angeles. And I've been here for 17 years and building the clinics. And now we have 10 sites all throughout South Los Angeles. And as I said, we serve over 35,000 individual patients, 120,000 visits a year.
And could you explain just briefly what federally qualified means?
Federally qualified health center means you've been approved by the Bureau of Primary Health Care, which is a division of HRSA, which is the Health Resources and Services Administration. And it means you provide a certain quality of care and a certain standard of care. And in response to that, you get a grant from the federal government to provide services to people without health insurance.
Okay, and that actually gets us into our next question. I guess, what different areas do you get your funding from? Obviously, some is federal, some comes from the state. There are endowments, grants, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Some of our patients have Medi-Cal, probably about 30%, 25-30%.
Medi-Cal is Medicaid,
Medicaid
for
is
California.
Yes, exactly.
In California. Yeah.
And they pay us to provide health care services to people with Medi-Cal, which are essentially... folks who live below the federal poverty level and have no health insurance. And it's mostly children who qualify. Most adults don't qualify, though under health reform they will. So that's one of our payers. Another, we get a lot of money from foundations. We do a lot of grant writing. We do a lot of fundraising. Individual donors, folks that have money want to contribute to primary health care and preventive health care for the poor. To poor families and children. And then we also get money from the county to serve the uninsured. And the state, which was at one point a significant funder, in the last budget problem situation, the governor, after making a promise not to cut health care, blue pencil line item vetoed almost all the traditional clinic programs that funded us. And so St. John's alone lost about $1 million over the summer as a result of the governor's cuts.
And could you describe, like, on a day-to-day, what is $1 million? You said $1 million a month?
$1 million a year.
A year, excuse me.
Right.
Like, what does that mean? Does that mean less employees here, less people get visits, obviously? Or does it mean just...
Yeah, I mean, you try to figure out how to make the impact as small as possible, but it essentially means that thousands of patients will not get health services. Mm-hmm. That's essentially what it means.
One of the things that just not just researching St. John's, but learning about, you know, the whole healthcare debate over the past year is some programs like Medicare are funded through the federal government and thus have the federal government's latitude in deficit spending during a recession, while most programs, it seems, for the that's target the poor specifically, Medicaid, SCHIP, those kind of things, are a hybrid of federal and state spending. Mm-hmm. But states are not able to deficit spend in the same way the federal government is. So you have an effect in a recession where when people in poverty need these kind of programs the most, those are exactly when the programs get cut at the state level. So how big of a problem has that been for you?
It's a huge problem, but in some ways it's a priority issue of the governor and the state legislature. So they don't have to cut programs for the poor. They don't have to balance the budget on the backs of poor children. I mean, they could institute an oil extraction fee for the oil companies that take oil out of the ground in California, like Sarah Palin did in Alaska, and they'd cure the deficit in a minute. But they choose not to do that. They make decisions about cutting services to the poor rather than increasing revenue from the rich. California has more millionaires than any other state in the country, more billionaires than any other state in the country, and there's still a tremendous amount of oil that's being extracted from our land, that, and we're the only state in the country that doesn't have an oil extraction fee. It's really a political priority issue, in my opinion.
I mean, how do you deal with the frustration of knowing my budget this year might not be the one next year, which might not be the one the year after? I mean, that makes it seems almost impossible to grow or expand. I assume one of the goals of St. John's is to make more clinics or just to service more as much people as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a constant struggle. It's a stressful environment. The county's good. The county has expanded programs to provide healthcare services for the poor, even in the recession. So they made certain decisions, for example, that the governor decided not to make. The federal government has also been expanding money to community health centers. The thing about community health centers is that we provide healthcare services at a fraction of the cost that a private physician or a hospital or the county, for that matter, can provide it. And so we're always one of the top three most cost-effective programs of the federal government. So it doesn't matter whether a Republican or a Democrat is in the White House. Over the last 10 years, there's been a continuous expansion of funding for community health centers. Democrats like us because we serve the poor and we, save the safety net. And Republicans like us because we're very cost-effective and efficient. And we operate, with very razor-thin profit margins, and we're able to provide a tremendous amount of service and care. And we serve both urban areas and rural areas, urban areas being represented by Democrats, rural areas being represented by Republicans. So on a federal level, over the last 10, 11 years, there's been an increase in funding, in spite of the economy, for community health centers because we're so cost-effective and we're so efficient. That there isn't that same perspective on the state level.
Could you give us an idea of the day-to-day socioeconomic circumstances of the average person you serve here?
We serve the poorest of the poor. We serve people who live below the federal poverty level. They live in slum housing. If you go into their homes, there's mold growing from leaky pipes and cockroaches and rats. And we have kids with cockroaches lodged in their ears that we pull out every day with ear infections. As a result, we have kids and families with rat bites on their legs. And we serve the poorest people in our country. And we're their safety net. I mean, basically, I don't know where they would be. I guess they would wind up in the emergency room, which is much, much more expensive for the community, for the country to treat, or they die on the streets if it wasn't for community health centers. These are folks who often don't have enough food to eat. They live in garages and in makeshift garages. They live, three, four, five families in a one-bedroom apartment. They're often working in, they're the working poor. They work really hard and they make very little money. Many are immigrants, but many are also long-term, African-American residents.
We, in doing research about St. John's, one detail we were struck with was just an example of a lot of people in these areas. Apparently, there are no grocery stores that they have access to, correct?
Correct.
And so they have to shop for things like fruits and vegetables, at least what kind of fruits and vegetables you can get at liquor stores. I guess I also was curious, do you know what the what percentage of the overall American population is having to sustain themselves at this level?
Well, I think there was a study that just came out that said about 20 million children in the United States of America live in poverty. That's outrageous, in my opinion. So we're talking a lot of people. And, you know, South Los Angeles is one of the largest areas of L.A. It has more than 1.1 million residents, and more than half of them live in poverty. So you're talking a lot of people across the country, both children and families, who live in poverty. And with the economic, you know, with the Great Recession and the economic downturn that we've been experiencing, even more and more families have been put into a situation where they've lost their jobs or lost their health insurance. We have families, middle class families from the West Side that come to our clinics because their kids lost their health insurance as a result of the economy. So, and I think what you have is a situation where, what does it mean that there are no supermarkets in South LA? What does it mean for you as a family that you have to shop in a liquor store for your groceries? First of all, you know how much groceries cost in a liquor store. I mean, you're not, it's really expensive.
Those are the specialty items in a liquor store.
Yeah, exactly. And what can you find, a lemon or a lime or something? I mean, it's no wonder that there's issues of obesity, that there's, we have an exercise and fitness class for diabetics, and we have a demonstration kitchen, and we teach diabetics how to cook with healthy ingredients. And it's more effective in reducing blood sugar levels than medication. So the preventive aspect of what we do is really important. And, you know, you could come here on any given day in our multipurpose room. You know, there's a whole bunch of, there's 80 or 90 diabetics doing aerobics, you know.
And what's the age range?
Anywhere from, you know, kids with early onset diabetes to, you know, 65-year-old women. And there was a woman, you know, who's been a regular part of our diabetic class, and she was in the clinic the other day, and her blood sugar had been well controlled, but her blood sugar levels were through the roof. And the doctor said to her, you know, what happened? You know, you were doing so well. And she said, well, I lost my job. You know, she was working as a seamstress, you know, she was making 2 cents a button or something. I mean, but, you know. And I didn't have any money for food for myself and my kids, so I got a pack of tortillas, which is, you know, all carbs.
Right.
And all we did, you know, I ate 40 tortillas in the last 3 days. That's all she had to eat.
Oh, God.
But there's a food security issue in South LA. Our families are food insecure. They don't know where their next meal, or if they're going to have money for their next meal. There's a lot of families like that. This is the richest country ever known to humankind. How is it that we allow that to happen?
Have there been any explanations offered as to why the access to a normal grocery store? I mean, is it just the chains don't see a profit potential coming? Has anybody explained why the stores aren't around here?
Yeah, this was explained to me recently because we've been engaging with supermarket chains about coming in here. And I'm not going to be able to explain this exactly and do the complete actuarials and all the stuff that that their accountants do to figure this thing out. But it's something like that they make most of their money when people buy a lot of items, because the amount of labor to check out that person is less than if you're checking out a lot of little groupings.
Okay.
Of food. And so, you know, there's some complicated ratio that they have worked out about their profit margins. And so in poor neighborhoods, people don't have the kind of income where they can maybe buy 2 weeks or the storage capacity for 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
So they're, in a poor community, everybody's only buying in small amounts every time they go to the grocery
store.
And
so that impacts on the profit margin of the supermarket.
And they've just decided it just wasn't, I guess, wasn't worth the cost-benefit analysis, in their opinion.
In their opinion. Now, you know, there's a lot of engagement now, and there's a Fresh and Easy that's come a little bit into South L.A., and but for the most part, it's a food desert in South LA, and that's one of the big problems. And a lot of nonprofits are looking into ways that we can form cooperatives or, start to do some out of the box thinking about how we can bring some healthy foods. One of the clinics down in Watts was able to work out a deal where there's a farmer's market that comes at least once a month. So we're trying to see if we can get that in this part of South LA. But it's a long process, difficult process.
What seems so tragic is that what you were saying earlier about diabetes, that it just creates, there's so much, like the food would be such a preventative means to get people less sick, so more people could get care if they get sick. And it just seems so tragic that way.
Yeah, it's like a catch-22 in a way, because with good food, you can really, really
you
control
can prevent,
your
You can prevent a lot right
you
off the bat.
You control your diabetes, yeah. You know.
What time do the doors open here?
7:30.
What time do people get in line?
5 in the morning.
Obviously it seems to state the obvious, but we sometimes forget. Like people don't have cars. I'm sure they're taking buses, coming in from long distances, sick while doing so. I mean, I'm sure it's a hardship for a lot of folks coming here.
Yeah, I mean that's why we keep opening more sites.
Okay.
Because we want to put them closer to the neighborhoods where, as close to the neighborhoods where people live so they don't have to travel as much. And, so we're opening three new sites this year in different parts of South LA. And we just keep, and health reform is going to help because there's a lot of money in there for expansion of community health centers to new sites. So we're going to take advantage of that. But folks are here, they're lining up 4 or 5 in the morning to be online.
And how late are you open?
7.
And do you try to just get as many people as possible?
Yeah, we try to see everyone who shows up that day.
What?
I mean, the other day, on Saturday, at this site, for example, we had one doctor because one of the doctors was sick and another doctor was on vacation. So we had one doctor and we had 47 patients that showed up first thing in the morning. When he opened the door, there was 47 patients there. And he said, and that's a lot for a doctor to see. And he said to the patients, every one of you will get seen today. It might take a while, so you're going to be here for a while, but I won't leave until every one of you gets seen. And he saw all 47 patients. That's kind of the mission of the organization. And so, again, there's times when we have to, where we're so full that it's impossible, and we have to ask people to come back the next day.
One thing that I also noticed in doing research about St. John's is, getting back to what you mentioned earlier, is just the everything under one roof setup. You have a pharmacy, you have general care, you have wellness, I guess, and training, teach people how to, cook better food, shop for better food, all that kind of thing.
And dental as well?
Yes.
Dental
and mental health.
And mental health. So that was one thing that I noticed. Like our system nationally seems to be it's fractured in terms of where the coverage comes from, but it's also fractured in terms of where providers come from. And so I guess there's a lot of just overlap or just inefficiencies that come from that. So do you think the model you have here at St. John's is scalable to the nation as a whole?
Yeah, there's now 7,500 community health center sites in Los Angeles, in the United States of America. So there's 7,500 primary and preventive care sites that are nonprofit community health centers. Under health reform, that will double to 15,000. The goal is to eventually have a community health center in every neighborhood. And it is a very efficient and effective way of providing primary and preventive care. And prevention is really what it's all about. And that's, in some ways, another, reason why the American healthcare system is so expensive, is because we don't invest on the front end. We don't invest in prevention. We invest on very expensive end-of-life and back-end tests and care for people who are already sick, rather than working on preventing them from getting sick. So consequently, Cuba has a better rate. We have a higher infant mortality rate than Cuba, for Christ's sake. We're 42nd in life expectancy in the world. We're the richest country in the world. That's a travesty. How did we go from being number one in health outcomes to being number 42? People in Saudi Arabia and Morocco live longer than people in the United States. That's an outrage. I mean, I think most people don't know this, you know?
I didn't know this.
You know, yeah. And we spend more on healthcare than any other nation in the world.
Why is it cheaper here? Why does a county hospital and everything else, like, what's... I mean, there seems to be a frustrating thing with healthcare. Like, it's hard to explain to the average person, like, why is healthcare in, let's say, a foreign country 20 times less expensive than here? Like, what's the difference? Like, what's the difference in the care?
I think there's two parts to your question. So I'll address the macro issue first. A third of every dollar, 0.3 cents of every dollar that we spend on healthcare goes to profit in this country. It goes to stock options, golden parachutes, executive salaries, executive bonuses. That's where it goes. Shareholder profit. That's where it goes.
This isn't insurance. This is actual hospital.
This is the cost of healthcare in the United States overall. A third of every dollar you spend goes to profit. So in Europe, in England, in Canada, you don't have that cost. You eliminate a third of the cost because it's a not-for-profit healthcare system. So consequently, to come down to the micro level of a community health center, we're a nonprofit community health center where there's nobody, we don't need to raise the kind of money that it would take to pay the kinds of executive salaries and shareholder options and golden parachutes and bonuses that CEOs of private corporations and private health insurance firms and private health companies are getting. So that's number one. Number two, there's an efficiency of scale because we're large and we serve a lot of patients, and we also get certain benefits as a nonprofit. So we can purchase drugs through the federal government at a discounted rate. So we can give pharmaceuticals to our patients. So that saves another chunk of money. We don't have to pay malpractice insurance because we're covered under the Federal Tort Claims Act. So all of we've never had a malpractice claim, and most community clinics don't, because we practice really high quality. We're held to very, very high standards. But the good news about this is that the federal government will defend us if we were to have a malpractice claim. And that's why they keep the standards for our performance so high, because they don't want to have to insure, you know, have that cost. So if you start, you know, you take the profit motive out, you take the cost of pharmaceuticals out, you take the cost of malpractice insurance out, you start to be able to deliver care at a much discounted rate. I mean, personally, I think when you're dealing with the health of a nation, in my opinion, it should be a nonprofit system. I have nothing against people making money. I have nothing against people starting businesses and selling a product that people want to buy and they become rich and they you know, that's fine. I mean, economic creativity and is what made America great. It's just, I don't have any problem with it. But I think as a nation, we have an obligation to provide some basic a basic safety net for our population. And we need to guarantee certain rights. And one of those, I think, is the right to health. I really believe that the health system should be nonprofit. We're talking about people's lives. We're talking about whether people live or die, literally. We're talking about whether their legs are amputated or not. And, you know, because you can't afford to pay a doctor to, you know... we had this situation where our diabetics would have like a minor foot infection or, you know, an ingrown toenail that would get infected. And we would refer them to the county for a podiatry visit. And it would take, you know, the county is so backlogged, it would take 6 to 9 months before they got to the county for their appointment. By the time they went, they had to have their foot amputated. Something that could have been treated by, you know, cleaning out the wound and prescribing broad-spectrum antibiotics and having another checkup in 2 weeks. So we said this isn't unconscionable. We can't. So we hired a podiatrist. And we've saved 773 limbs in the last year as a result. You know, this country, in my opinion, has really moved away from the kind of social safety net necessary to make sure that everybody lives a decent life. And I really think that every American has a right to health and a right to health care. And if you kind of set up a situation in such a way so that people have to constantly struggle just to eat. This is the richest country in the world. Why is that? Why is that the policies that we're in?